Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on 20 small private businesses when we come back. You know, back in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin, but public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks and bonds and Federal Reserve notes and credit cards, debt and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there's no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and that of clad coin and currency. And you know, that's true when you're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries, but out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes due on that paper over gold. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew as a matter of law that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. Those politicians knew, and they knew full well back in 1933 when they did it, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to destroy those property rights under the first blank to the Communist Manifesto. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, our duties, and our capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me teach you how to do just that. That's in our business school, which is now on computer and on compact disc for adult homeschool. For more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. Best of all, it's free. You can call right now. That number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about 20 small private businesses. Businesses that you can do, I can do, anybody can do. You don't have to have $1 million to get started, startup costs. You don't have to have a business license. You don't have to go out here in the marketplace and go to college and get a PhD or something like that in order to make a living. And these are little small private businesses that anybody can do. Common law occupations, they used to be called, like a carpenter is a common law occupation, or a plumber. So your government came along and they want to license those. And they want you to turn your common law occupation, that is your natural inherent rights, into some kind of a franchise or a privilege that can be taxed. It makes all the sense in the world for government to do that, and I don't deny it. It just doesn't make any sense for us to do it. Now I'm going to give you a couple, three stories here, just like I did the last time, concerning people out there in the real business world that are making a living. They make their living doing kind of odd, unusual things that you might think, well, I would never do anything like that. Well, you don't have to. You know, if you're a mortgage broker and you got a job and you're working every day, that's fine. But your mortgage broker job is coming to an end. Then what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to go out and look for another mortgage broker job. I told you in the last program that's going to be a tough road to hoe. But I also told you about a mortgage broker down in Dallas, Texas that's out making millions. I mean, this guy has scored big. He's scoring bigger now that he's out of working for wages for the mortgage industry. He's making more money now than he ever made in his life. And sometimes it happens by accident. Sometimes it's just one of those events, like I told you about this guy, Wally, got into the used car business down in Orlando, Florida, just accidentally launched him into his used car business. Now, Wally sells about 4 or 5 cars a week. He makes about $500 a car selling 5 a week. That's $2,500 a week. That's about $10,000 a month. That's about $120,000 a year. He doesn't have a license to buy and sell cars. Now, you know, somebody's going to say, well, you got to have a license if you're going to sell those cars. No, you don't. He doesn't. Sells them right off his carport. Hell, he doesn't even have a garage.
Now, you got to be a little bit wise. You know, Jesus made an observation one time. He says, you need to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Now, a lot of people get into the tax protest business, or they get into the tax protest program, and it ends up with a lot of grief. It just ends up with a lot of grief. I've been in this business for 25 years, and I can tell you that I haven't seen any successful tax protesters in 25 years. Not a one. And I'm not one of them. I know I'm called a tax protester all the time. I'm called a lot of things, but I'm not a tax protester. I'm not protesting any taxes. The United States government has to have taxes in order to survive, in order to function. And the people that are in the tax collecting business, and the judges and the prosecutors and all the rest of them, those people are all doing their jobs. And then they're sincere people, and they believe in what they're doing. And I've said many times, I'm not paying any income tax, and there's a logical reason. I don't have any income. I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I avoid stocks and bonds. I avoid mortgages and interest and banks and banking services and Social Security and Social Security numbers and the mark of the beast. These are events that and activities that I avoid. And as a result of that, I don't have any income, and I don't have any income tax to pay. If you don't own any real estate, you won't have any property tax to pay. How's that for a plan? So if you're complaining about the property tax, get out of real estate. That's all. Now, if you want income, and most people want income, well, then get ready to pay the income tax. And see what happens. You got income, pay income tax. Don't have any income, don't pay any income tax. Now, I showed you last week that if you're paying income tax and Social Security, those two taxes out of 14 taxes that you're liable for, all of us, you got these 14 taxes out here, like the sword of Damocles hanging over our heads. Those two taxes, Social Security, income tax, take 33 1/3% of everything you create and produce. So I showed you last week, if you could eliminate those two taxes, then you don't need to make $100,000 a year, you'll need to make $66,000. Can you follow that? All right. So I showed you last week that to live the $100,000 lifestyle, all I have to do is make $40,000 a year, you know, in the equivalent Federal Reserve note dollars. And then I showed you, I said, now, you know, if you do that in gold and silver coin, instead of doing that in Federal Reserve notes, you could avoid having any income. You wouldn't have to pay any income tax. And that's what we call being wise as a serpent, harmless as a dove. And at the same time, you're in compliance now with the law of God. And that's very important that you comply with the Mosaic law, the law that Moses brought down off Mount Sinai. Now, all of these private businesses can be done in gold and silver coin. I just wanted to point that out. Now, maybe you don't know how. I teach a business school. If you want to learn how and how to perform on many of these stories that you hear here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then keep in mind that we have a school that we actually teach that. I can't teach you everything, you know, an hour a day over the radio, but I can sure teach you. The binder in our business school here is a 2-inch binder, just jam-packed about 500 pages of material. Just one story after another, with the documentation that goes behind it, you know, along with all of the laws and the statutes and judgments, you know, I told you about gold and silver and Title 31 of the U.S. Code. You know, a lot of that's Greek to most of you people out there. But I didn't write it. Your Congress did. And after all, you're sovereign citizens. You voted those people into office. And you as a sovereign and a voter, you're supposed to be smarter than your servants, aren't you? Aren't you voters out there smarter than the politicians that you elect to office? Isn't the master over his servants? Unfortunately, most Americans aren't as smart as the average politician. And don't understand the guardian ward relationship that comes from it. So I pointed that out, and I said, you know, I'm not really sure that we ought to be out there voting for things that we don't understand, or voting for people that we don't know. I'm not here to tell you how to vote or who to vote for. I'm just here to tell you, why don't you think about that? I'm not quite sure that that's the wisest course of action. Now, when it comes to business, the government has built a business model on the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. They have replaced the 10 Commandment business model. And I think that was a mistake. When we quit using gold and silver coin and went to Federal Reserve notes and checks and credit cards, I think that was a mistake. And as time progresses along, I think that mistake is going to become more and more obvious to more and more of you people. Now, it may not be obvious yet, but it'll get that way as we progress along. Now, let me pick up a story here. It's called the produce business. Remember last time we talked about real estate and automobiles? Let's talk about produce. Can you sell tomatoes, bananas, oranges, carrots, cucumbers? You know, most people would say, well, no, I don't want to go to work at Kroger's and work in the produce department. You see, that's the mentality that most Americans have. It's called jobs, jobs, jobs. And you learned that in public school. And you probably learned it from mom and dad, because they learned it in public school, and they probably learned it from their moms and dads. And so generation after generation, just like generation after generation of welfare recipients, we end up with generation after generation of employees, just one group of employees. And I don't care whether you got a degree after your name. You know, if you're working for Lockheed or ExxonMobil, you know, as an employee pulling down $100,000 a year, you're still a bondservant. People that work for wages are called bondservants in the Bible. How would you like to be a common law freeman? You know, well, in common parlance, they call it an independent businessman or a self-employed businessman. Now take off that self-employment because that has an income tax attached to it. Forget about Social Security and let's go out and make some money so that we don't need welfare. And that's all Social Security is welfare. Well, first of all, it's a welfare program for the bureaucracy that it sustains. And then it's welfare for you when you collect it. Have you ever thought about supporting yourself? And don't throw your money away on supporting a lot of other people that you probably can't afford to support. So let's take a look here at the produce store. There was a young fellow one time in Chicago, and this is back many years ago now, but he was pretty poor. He was struggling to make ends meet. You know, every time you go down to the store, and you see this on the 6 o'clock news with Katie Couric, because they're always interviewing people in the supermarket. And so they go into the supermarket and they say, well, what do you think about price? Oh, my God, prices are going up, and the carrots are going up, and the tomatoes are going up, blah, 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 blah. Well, okay, that's true. And, you know, if you're making lots of money and you're working, you can probably afford to buy your produce out of Kroger's and Safeway. But, you know, I don't buy my produce out of Kroger's and Safeway. I do some. I shouldn't say I don't buy any, but I buy some. But I like to grow it here myself. And then what I can't grow myself, maybe I got to go buy it. And I don't buy it from Kroger's if I can avoid it. I go buy it from some little roadside stand, some small guy, some little guy that's out here growing organic produce. Now, have you ever looked at that guy that's selling that organic produce, you know, in the service station, you know, the old abandoned service station or in the Walmart parking lot or something like that? And ask yourself, well, how's this guy making a living? How much money does this guy make? Is he paying his income tax? Is this a cash business? You know, what's going on here? Ever wonder about that? Most people don't, but I'm an old-timey businessman, and I'm always wondering, always thinking about, well, what's this guy selling? What's this guy doing? And how much money is he making? What's his markup? What's his mark? What's his profit? And over the years, I've interviewed a lot of people and talked to them, and this guy here in the produce business in Hillside, Illinois. And honest to God, I don't know where Hillside, Illinois is. I've been there a couple, three times. I couldn't find it at high noon with a road map. But when somebody directs me there, you know, to the Holiday Inn in Hillside, I go there and I talk to people. And then they load me up in the machine and take me away someplace. I get in these big cities and I don't know where in the hell I am or where I'm going or how I got there or where how I'm going to get out. But somehow or another, I've escaped so far. Well, anyway, this guy is in Hillside, Illinois. Now, he lives in Chicago. But Chicago has a lot of rules and regulations. And this is called the Green River Ordinance. Green River Ordinance. That's where government gets into the act and they say you can't go from door to door and sell things to people. And there may be some good reasons for that. I'm sure door-to-door salesmen are kind of rude, obnoxious guys selling encyclopedias and one thing and another. So you got to get a business license to do that. See? And, you know, as a guerrilla capitalist, I don't want a business license. And what I want to do is I want to contract with people. Now, in Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution, we have a right to contract. And our right to contract cannot be impaired by government or government agencies. And here's another little kicker. Your Supreme Court came out one time in Miranda versus Arizona, and they said where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, such as your right to contract. There can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. So when we take a look at the law, and when we say to ourselves, well, no, we want to obey all the laws, and we want our government officials to obey all the laws also. So it's important for us to know the law and then comply with it. That's the trick to this. You know, you need to comply with all the laws of the United States and all the laws of Illinois and your state and all the laws of God and do it all simultaneously. You can do that. It ain't the easiest thing in the world, but you can do it. And so this young fellow, he needed to do that. And so he wants to sell. First of all, he wanted to buy produce. And so he got to looking around and talking to some people, and he found out that there's a produce market in Chicago, produce market. And that's where the buyers and sellers get together, and they go down, and carloads of lettuce come in from the Salinas Valley of California and citrus from Florida, and it comes into Chicago, New York, all these big cities. They have a produce market. And so he went down there. You have to go down there early in the morning. It starts at 1 o'clock in the morning and runs till about 5. And produce buyers, I mean big guys, you know, guys that go down there and buy truckloads or buy whole railroad carload lots of lettuce, buy that stuff, and then they turn around and sell it. And there's all this buying and selling and trading going on. There's fish markets, and there's produce markets, and there's stock markets, and commodities markets. And my God, boys and girls, there's markets out there galore. And they're hidden from the average Joe Sixpack. I mean, you know, the average Sally housewife that does all of her shopping in Battlefield Mall, she hasn't got a clue as to where that stuff comes from. She couldn't find it with both hands at high noon. But now, Sally, you know, when tough gets to tough over here, you might need to find out where to go buy a case of carrots. Now, when you go to Walmart, they'll sell you one orange. When you go to the produce market, you can't buy one orange. You might get up there with the big boys and be buying oranges by the case or oranges by the pallet, in which case then you got to buy the whole pallet of oranges. Now, when you buy one orange at Walmart, they're about $1 an orange. I was in there the other day. I could hardly believe my earballs when I saw the prices on there. I can hear you. That's retail. That's the retail market. And they're selling you one orange, and you got to pay $1 for it. But how much did Walmart pay when they bought that one orange? Well, they didn't buy one orange. They probably bought a whole railroad car full of oranges. And they probably paid about a nickel or a dime an orange.
That's right.
When Walmart buys those oranges, they pay about 10 cents for the orange, and they turn around and sell it for a dollar or 90 cents or 80 cents. They got lots of keystones in there. I mean, they got lots of marks. So, you know, little guys like us, you know, we take a look at them big fish feeding up on the top, and we say, well, how could we get up there close to the top and feed off of that? And then, by golly, boys and girls, there's a way to do that. So when you buy a carload of oranges, that's where you get the best buy. Now, the guy that's selling oranges, he's got a whole orchard full of oranges. And those oranges get ripe all at the same time. And this guy has got truckloads and truckloads of oranges, and he's got to have a place to get rid of those. And he's a commodity producer, and he sells that stuff just dirt cheap. So if you go out here and you want to buy one orange from a guy that's got truckloads of oranges out here in the orchard, he ain't even going to talk to you. He's got work to do, boys and girls, and he ain't selling one orange. He ain't even going to sell you a box of oranges. He's going to sell you a truckload of oranges. And you got to be prepared to buy a truckload of oranges. Now, what are you going to do with a truckload of oranges? So you got to have some place to put those. So there's another factor that comes into play over here. How long, what is the shelf life of this product? The shorter the shelf life, the higher the markup. The shorter the shelf life, the higher the markup. So when you're selling strawberries, you know, that guy that's selling strawberries out there in the field, he's selling, you know, boxes and boxes and truckloads of strawberries. Because when this stuff comes in all at the same time. When the oranges get ripe on the orange trees, I mean, they got to be sold down. So Walmart comes along and they buy a carload of oranges. Now, they've got lots of stores to sell those carloads of oranges in. So they send it over to a warehouse someplace and divide those up into pallets, send those pallets off to individual stores. Now, in a truckload, there's 26 pallets. 26 pallets in a truckload. And they get in there with a forklift and they unload those 26 pallets, and there goes a truck. Well, a carload is twice that many. That's a railroad car is 52 pallets, twice as many. So what are you going to do with 52 pallets? Now, each pallet's going to have on there about 50 boxes of oranges. See where we're going with this? Now, these oranges end up at what's called the produce market. And there's other people beside Walmart. And they don't buy carloads and truckloads. They just buy pallets. So they buy a pallet, and then they sell 50 boxes. And then there's people that buy boxes, and then they sell oranges one at a time. See how that works? So you start off with the farmer with truckloads, which then goes into carloads and truckloads, which then goes into pallets, which then goes into boxes, which then goes into the store, which then gets sold one orange at a time. And so the farmer down here, he's getting maybe 2-3 cents an orange. And then the next guy that's up the line over here buying these carloads, you know, he's maybe making 10 cents an orange. And then this goes on to the next guy and the next guy and the next guy who finally sells this orange to you for a dollar. And so here's a 2-cent orange out in the field that's selling for a dollar in the store. Now that's a lot of markup. That's a lot of profit for a lot of people that handle that orange. And it's a great value. I mean, you know, you don't have to grow the orange, water the orange, or worry about the frost killing the oranges or getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, to go out there and start your irrigation system to keep your oranges from freezing. You just walk into the store and you tool around with your little shopping cart and you pick up a couple oranges and you check out. So that being the case, keep that in mind. Now, here's a produce business over here. Here's a guy that's thinking about this. So he goes down to the produce market in Chicago, and he finds that the least he can buy is a case. So he buys a case of carrots, takes them home. He's got carrots to juice. He's got carrots to give away, throw away. And so he's got friends, and so he's giving his carrots away to his friends. But he finds that he can buy a whole case of carrots for about 25% of what he can buy these carrots for in the store. Sometimes less. And so he says, that's a hell of a good value. Case of carrots lasts him for a week or more. And so he says, well, how about oranges and apples and other things? So pretty soon he finds that he's buying by the case and it's saving him money, but he can't use it all. So he starts selling it to recover the balance of the money that he cannot use up himself to his friends. And he gets to thinking about that and he says, you know, why don't I go down here and then buy for my friends and sell to them? And he did. Now, everybody has 10 friends, and so you go to your 10 friends, and those 10 friends, they all use apples and oranges and carrots, one thing and another. And he got to thinking about that one day, and he says, well, what would happen if I was to go out here and start selling this to other people? So he started knocking on doors, and it didn't take very long until the city of Chicago came down on him, and they said, hey, listen, you got to have a license and permits, and you got to be bonded and insured. And it was called the Green River Ordinance. And so this guy came to one of my classes one day, and he asked me, one of my seminars, and he said, what about this Green River Ordinance? And I said, well, and see, what you're trying to do here is you're trying to knock on people's door and then sell them produce. And you can't do that. You can't do that without a license. But you can contract with those very same people under Article 1, Section 10, and you don't need a license. He kind of stared at me blankly and said, I don't see the difference. And I said, well, here's the way to do that. And you don't go out here with your carrots and knock on the door and say, here's some carrots, would you like to buy them? You go out and knock on their door and you say, I'm a produce man, a wholesaler. I buy at the produce market, and I deliver to customers by contract. under Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution. I'm not a door-to-door salesman, lady. You cannot buy one orange from me. But you could contract with me, and where you're paying a dollar for an orange down at Walmart, you can buy oranges from me for 25 cents an orange. And the lady says, well, that sounds like a pretty good idea. How often do you come by? He says, twice a week, on Tuesday and Saturday. So if you want to buy from me on Tuesday or Saturday or Monday and Friday, or, you know, pick out a couple of days a week, what you do is you put in your order with me and you tell me what it is that you want to buy. And you can do that by email, or you can do that when I'm here, or you can tell me what it is. And I go down to the produce market and I buy by the case, by the pallet, if I've got that much in the way of sales. And then I mark it up a little bit and I come out here and I sell it to you. But instead of paying retail down at the supermarket, you're paying the dealer price or the wholesale price from the market plus my markup, and I deliver it to you, so you don't ever have to go shopping. You just tell me that I want 10 pounds of oranges and 10 pounds of carrots and 10 pounds of this and 10 pounds of that, or whatever you want. And I come by on Tuesday and I deliver it. You pay me. So, okay. He went out and he got about 100 customers together and signed contracts with 100 customers. Now he can go down and buy a pallet load. He can go down and buy 10 cases. He can go down and he can start buying at the same prices that the supermarkets and the local grocery stores are buying for. So your little local grocery store over here, like a 7-Eleven or a small store, say they're not buying pallets and truckloads. They're just buying cases. You know, they buy a case of oranges once a week and they sell them. And they've got to have enough markup in there so that when the oranges go bad, you know, produce goes bad. It's supposed to be realistic. When the produce goes bad, you know, you lose whatever produce you've lost. And that's 100% loss to you. You paid a nickel for it, and when it rots, you've lost a nickel. That's why you have to sell those for 50 cents. So that way, when you sell half of them, you still made a good markup on them. So you can buy that stuff for a nickel, sell it for 50 cents, and lose half of it and still make a good profit. Now, that's the small produce business. Now, that kind of a business just works like a shot. I don't know how many students that I have out there selling produce all over America right now, today. They're not in violation of the Green River Ordinance. They got a contract with each and every one of their customers. And they've got a pickup truck, and they go down to the produce market, and they buy. And they buy in volume, and then they go out and they sell it at the retail level, but they sell it for the wholesale price. Everybody is interested in a bargain. Everybody. And anybody can learn how to do produce. I mean, hell, you can go down to the local grocery store and learn how to buy carrots. And the question arises, would you pay me to deliver this to you for half what you're paying in the supermarket? Did you get that? Will you pay me 50 cents for an orange that you're now paying a dollar for down at the supermarket if I deliver it to you twice a week? Now, ask a customer that when you knock on their door. And if they complain to the city and say, hey, there's this guy knocking on my door selling, you ain't selling nothing. You've got a right to free speech. That's protected by the First Amendment. You can go knock on anybody's door and ask them if they know Jesus. You can go knock on anybody's door and ask them if they would vote for Barack Obama. And you can go to anybody's door and ask them if they would like to do business with you at the wholesale level. And the guy can say yes or no, get the hell out of here. And if he says get the hell out, leave. That's all. But that's not a violation of Green River. The violation of Green River is when you got carrots in your hand and you say, I'm in the wholesale business, would you like to buy these carrots? Now you're in violation, you need a license. That's why I say law. Legal education, you know, is one of the most valuable educations you can get. The one guy's breaking the law and the other guy isn't. Both of them doing exactly the same thing. Knocking on the door, soliciting business. One's doing it under Article 1, Section 10. The other guy's doing it in violation of the Green River Ordinance. All right, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's eight schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through our website as well. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views or the beliefs or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about 20 small private businesses, 20 little small private businesses that you can do, I can do, anybody can do. Now, the produce business, I think, is a kind of business that probably, you know, people that are unskilled can do. Now, how much money do you make? Well, you make a living at it. You're not going to get rich selling produce door to door. You'll probably make more than wages, though, and you'll probably do a cash business, and you'll probably drop out of the income tax. Now, if you're collecting Federal Reserve notes from people, you should be paying your income tax. That's what the law requires. But, you know, if you were down here at the produce market paying Federal Reserve note dollars for a box of oranges, and let's say you bought the box of oranges for $6, and then went out and sold these oranges for gold and silver coin, which is priced at face value under Title 31, Section 5112, you'd be having a net loss. Without a Social Security number, you'd be in compliance with the law. With a Social Security number, you need to file and pay. Now, if you'd like to learn how the law works and why it works that way, that's why the law school and a legal education is very valuable to you. In fact, I think that a legal education, which is what God designed in the Bible, that every man, woman, and child on planet Earth should have a legal education. A legal education based upon the Ten Commandment model from the bottom up, with limited government and hard money. Now, of course, we woke up one day and we said, no, we want to have soft money, we want to have a liberal arts education, we want to practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and practice central banking and income tax with Social Security. Well, it's a choice that you have to make in life, and most people have made it. And I'm not here to tell you what choice you should make. But when you get to the point where you can't pay your bills, your house is being foreclosed on, you've lost your job, and you're standing in line with your hand out, and you get tired of that, then you can get off your dead you-know-what, and you can go to work. And that's what we're talking about here. It's going to work. Now, there are a number of business principles. I have more than 100 principles that I follow that I got from the Bible and other business people. They don't all come from the Bible. Some of them came from the richest man in Babylon. Some of them come from other business people. Some of them come from students, and some of them come from the Bible. Now, this Green River Ordinance over here, story over here, is a very valuable story. Now, let me tell you another story over here about a mechanic. And I had a student one time who worked for the Guy F. Atkinson Company. And that used to be, in the old days, that was a big road building and construction company. And this guy back in the, well, that was back in the early 80s. This guy was making $4,000 a month. I mean, it was obscene. He was a superintendent. He was a mechanic, but he was a superintendent of heavy off-highway equipment. You know, those big Letourneau trucks and Caterpillar tractors and things like that. And he supervised the mechanics and the on all this equipment out here. And last time he was working was on a road construction project up in Lovelock, Nevada. And he got involved in the tax protest business, which, remember, I told you always leads to grief. And so sure enough, he got into it and he got prosecuted and convicted and went to prison for, I don't know, I think it was willful failure to file. I think he served 18 months in the big house. And when he got out of the big house, he had to find some other line of employment because, you know, oftentimes when you have been convicted of a felony, and I'm not sure enough this guy was convicted of a misdemeanor. It's a misdemeanor for willful failure to file. I think that he got burned for tax evasion as well, which is a felony. And I kind of forget now, it's been a lot of years back, but typically when you're convicted for a felony, you know, if you're a doctor, a dentist, a professional, you know, you lose your license and you can't get back again. See, once you screw bail, he don't forgive. There's no forgiveness of sin with the state. God, the creator of the universe, he will forgive your sins. The God of the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand will never forgive your sins. Never. If you live to be 110, your record's going to follow you to the grave and beyond. So a lot of times students come here to the law school and they're convicted felons and they need some way to do business. They've got to have a way that they can make a living, you know, other than selling dope on the streets and robbing banks and things like that. You know, if you want to go straight, it's a tough road to hoe because the state ain't there to help you. If you think the state's here to help you and you wonder why we've got so much recidivism in crime, it's because when these people get out of prison, the state never forgives them their sins. They can never go back to work in the kind of business that they were in before. They can never get out of crime. So they go back to crime because it's the only thing they know. And that's why forgiveness of sins is kind of important. But then that's another story for another day. So anyway, this guy, he came to my business school up in Boise, Idaho, and I put him through business school, and he left, and I didn't hear from the guy for a long time. That's typical, you know. People go to school here, they don't necessarily call me on the phone, give me a blow-by-blow description of their life, you know, from that point on, you know, like Oprah. But one day I happened to be down at Keith's, you know, in Lovelock, stopped in there for lunch, and Lo and behold, this guy came in with two other guys and sat down. And it had been quite a few years, you know, several years had gone by, and this guy looked over at me, and I looked over at him, and he looked over at me, and I looked over at him, and pretty soon he got up and he came over to my table and he said, "Aren't you George Gordon?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I am." I said, "You know, you look pretty familiar." And he said, "Well, yeah, my name is Joe Baloney. I'm the mechanic. I used to work for Atkinson, you know, heavy equipment." And I said, "Well, yeah, I remember you now. Went through business and tax school and so on, yeah." So, and I said, "Well, bring your buddies over and let's sit down and eat here and we'll do a little chit-chat." And so we're sitting there eating lunch and chit-chatting. And so I said, "Well, what are you doing now?" He said, "Well, I'm operating a private business, cash only." And he said, I'm still in heavy equipment." But he said, "I'm working for farmers now primarily and small construction companies and little small, you know, people that..." And I said, "Tell me what's going on." He said, "Well, let me give you an illustration." He said, "I'm working on a job right now right outside town. And a farmer out here, you know, these farmers, you know, they're big agribusiness businessmen, and they've got Caterpillar tractors, D9s, you know, and things like that. And it costs thousands of dollars, boys and girls, just to load that machine on a truck and haul it to town to have the Caterpillar dealer work on." And he said, "I can work on John Deere or Caterpillar, Case, you know, anything. I can work on Kubota or any, whatever brand. And I do it right there at the farm. I do it right there in the guy's shop. And I do it for half price. Half price." And I said, "Well, now that's pretty novel. Now, where the shop price is $110 an hour, this guy is working for $55 an hour out of his pickup. Now, his pickup's got one of these utility bodies on it. Utility body, that's, you know, like the telephone company trucks, you know, and they got all these boxes and compartments on there. He carries parts, carries his tools. He had a one-ton truck dually, you know, one-ton dually and a big winch on it so he can lift tracks and stuff, you know, just like they had out there at Guy F. Atkinson, except now instead of working for wages, he's working for himself." I said, "Well, that's interesting. How do you get your customers?" He says, "Word of mouth." He said, "It takes a little time to get started, but you got to go out and knock on some doors. You go out and you knock on a door and you say, 'I'm a mechanic. Here's my truck. There's my tools.'" And he had a business card that says, "Have tools, we'll travel. Have tools." Remember, used to be a guy named Richard Boone. He says, "Have gun, we'll travel." And a lot of people have picked up on that. And they say, "No, have truck, we'll travel. Have tools, we'll travel." And so he goes around from guy to guy. Well, now, I had another mechanic in here one time. I'll tell you a story. He was from the Army, a young fella. He had a little Volkswagen pickup, had his tools in a toolbox in the back of his Volkswagen. And he had about 15 customers. He's a single guy, and he was from Vermont. Not very many people from Vermont. And he just traveled from Vermont to Washington State and back to Vermont by way of Texas and Missouri. Had about 15 customers. And he hired on, I haven't heard from this guy now for several years, but for about 4 or 5 years, he did all of my mechanical work here on the farm. And he would blow in here. Here on my farm, you know, I've got tractors and small equipment. I don't have big operation, but I do have two or three tractors and two or three pickups and cars and things like that. And all of that stuff needs to be fixed. And mainly, he would come by here about the 1st of November, come by about twice a year, 1st of November, and then he would winterize all of my equipment. And, you know, for a guy like me, you know, who's, you know, got five thumbs on both hands, that's pretty darn handy. And he would work for about half what the mechanic does over here in the shop. And the guy in the shop will not come out here to my farm and put in antifreeze and winterize all of my vehicles. He's not going to leave his shop and come over and do that. But this guy would. Now, this guy made his living just traveling around the country and talk about what's my line. Did he pay any taxes? No. Social Security number? No. All cash business? Yes. Doing business in gold and silver coin? Well, with me he did. I don't know about the rest of his customers. Now, you're starting to get some drift over here. Now, of course, you got to be a mechanic to do that kind of work. But, hey, a lot of you people out there are mechanics, carpenters, plumbers, electricians. You people all have skills and abilities that you've been selling, like I did for years, to International Harvester. You know, I worked at International, sold my labor to International for $3 an hour, and they sold it shop labor was $12 an hour. Now, I left that and went into the contracting business for $12 an hour instead of $25 an hour, and here's the magic number. You sell your time for 50% of what the shop rate is, and you'll have customers just coming out your earballs. Now, remember, if you're working for wages, you make your boss the same amount that he's paying you. So if the shop rate is $25 an hour, he's paying you $10 an hour, $2.50 an hour goes for $5 an hour goes to taxes and overhead, and he pays you $10 and he makes $10. Well, why don't you just charge $12.50 and make it all? Have you ever thought about that? Just charge $10 and make it all, or $12 and make it all. That's what I did when I went into the building maintenance business. Now, a lot of you guys out there are probably pretty handy. Now, let me show you something over here. Years ago, I was working for International and Earl Sherman and other shops. And I was living in an apartment house, and the guy that was managing the apartment house, who I knew pretty well, you know, paid my rent to him every month, he had saved enough money to buy a house, and he said to me, "Would you like to manage this building?" And I never thought of it, never entered my mind. And I said, "Well, I don't know, what do you have to do?" And he said, "Well, you just collect the rent at the end of the month, and you do a little maintenance around here, mow the grass, and one thing and another, you get free rent." And I was paying about $100 a month rent, as I recall, $110. And $110 a month, you know, that was a lot of money. You know, I was making $128 a week, net take-home pay, $128 a week. So $110 a month was nearly a week's wage. And if I could, you know, save a week's wage, why, my goodness, that'd be, you know, quite a step forward. And so this guy had saved enough money, been managing for 3 or 4 years, saved his money, and now he's going to go buy his house in the suburbs. And so I said, "Yeah, I'll do that." And so guy's name was Greg Dixon. Greg Dixon Real Estate in Oakland, California. I went over and was interviewed, and he gave me the job. And so I went to work there, and I noticed that there were apartments running for $65 a month, and yet I was paying $110. Now, my apartment was a lot better than some of these others, and so I got to looking at that. And so I applied a little, I just applied a little common sense to that, and I said, you know, my job here as the manager is to make money for my boss. And Mr. Dixon over here gave me a job, and I'm managing his building, and he's paying me now my $110 a month in the free rent. So an apartment came vacant, and my wife and I went in there, we painted it, went in and repainted it. And I did some other work and maintaining there. And so I raised the rent from $65 to $110 a month. I never said anything to Mr. Dixon. I just turned in my report. And of course, he saw that apartment, you know, had been running for $65, and now I'd raised the rents on that. Now, I didn't understand the multiplier factor over here, but when I raised that rent, $45 a month, I increased the value of his property by several thousand dollars. And he was really impressed. And as time went on, he sold the building to another outfit that was in the renovation business, and he recommended that they keep me. Now, ordinarily, the boss of that company, he said, "We normally just fire managers and hire our own," but Dixon said that you were renovating some apartments here and that you'd done two or three of them, and that that's our business. We buy a distressed property, and then we renovate it, and then we refinance it, and then we take that refinance money out tax-free. So let me show you how this works. And if you buy a building and you renovate that building, increase the rents, and then you refinance the building, the refinance money is borrowed money and there's no tax to pay on that. And that was this company's business. And this is the guy that offered me $12 an hour to go to work for him. Remember, I'm working for $328 now as a machinist, as a union man working for International Harvester. This guy says, "I'll pay you $12 an hour." Now, remember, I'm a practicing communist, been educated in the public school system. Well, I agonized long and hard over giving up my free benefits, you know, my unemployment insurance, workman's compensation, and medical benefits, and paid up hospital insurance and all that, you know, and your seniority. And, you know, and you're going to take a job here as an entrepreneur. Well, now, after you've already lost your job, or your job has been outsourced to India, see, you won't have that problem. I mean, hell, you're already unemployed, Bob. You don't need to agonize over, "Well, should I give up my job and all my friends' benefits here?" You know, hell, it's already gone. It's over in India. So now, without that handicap bogging you down, hell, you can just go out here and go to work for twice as much money, and I think you're going to live a lot better. I did, and I never went back, and I don't think you will either. You know, once you break the habit, it's like drugs, you know. Once you get off that drug habit, you know, then you get out to living your life. All right, now, the guy that was working for Guy F. Atkinson and went out and started making money, I asked him, I said, "Are you doing as well now as you were doing with Atkinson?" He said, "Hell, no comparison. I make at least two or three times as much as I made at Atkinson, tax-free." Now, here was a guy making $4,000 a month. Boys and girls, $4,000 a month around 1980 was a god-awful lot of money. You know, 80, 85, long in there. That's a lot of money. And by now, you know, it's double that. You'd have to be making $8,000 a month. You know, that's $100,000 a year. Now, he was making a good living, you know, as a supervisor. Now he's making two or three times that. But you want to keep in mind that when you're working for yourself as a trader, that you don't have a steady income. You don't get a paycheck every Friday. When you get a paycheck, it's a big one, but it doesn't come every Friday. And when you're a wage earner, you see, you're living from paycheck to paycheck, and you depend upon that check every Friday. This is why it's important that when you get into your own private business now, you've got to save half. Because sometimes it's a long time between paydays, and there's no unemployment insurance. And if you break your leg on the job, there's no workman's compensation. And when you get to be an old man, there isn't any Social Security retirement. Now, communists need Social Security, unemployment insurance, and workman's compensation. Traders at law on a cash basis don't. But we have to learn how to manage our money. And money management's a very important tool. Money management, very important tool. Now, if you can learn how to manage money, most of you out there can make it. You can't hang on to it. Most of you people out there don't have any problem making money. What your problem is that after you've made it, somebody else comes along and takes it away from you. It's either the IRS has taken away an income tax, Social Security's taken it away in a Ponzi scheme, or, you know, you're losing it to interest to the bank, or you're making payments, you know, on your mortgage or something like that, and you're living from paycheck to paycheck because all your money is spoken for. The bottom line is you do not know how to manage your money. Now, if you could learn how to manage your money, just couple that with the amount of money that you're making, you'd be in Easy Street. You'd be in Fat City. Fat City. Now, industries are being wiped out, like the garlic industry that I told you about in Gilroy, California. You know, the government opened up free trade. That free trade brought Chinese garlic into the United States at $3.65 a pound, and the garlic people have to get $16 a pound for it. I mean, here in the United States. I mean, if you're going to pay people, you know, $10 an hour here in the United States, you've got to get $16 a pound for garlic. So they opened up a free trade, and they destroyed the garlic industry in Gilroy, California. So if you're one of those garlic workers, if you're one of those mortgage brokers, if you're a real estate salesman and your job now has evaporated before your eyeballs, hell, you're a prime candidate for private business. Prime candidate. Now, I can't teach you everything you know in 60 minutes on the air, but I can teach you a lot. And I'll bet you I told you a lot more today than you knew before. Now, if you come to school here, I think I can teach you how to make a lot of money, be independent for the rest of your life. There's certain principles that come from the Bible, come from God himself, that if you'd follow those principles and just use a little reason, logic, and common sense, and a little hard work. Now, a whole bunch of hard work. I think that you can tell the mortgage company and you can tell all these corporations to kiss off. Hey, I'm out of time again here, kids, so I'm going to have to give you another reminder here, final reminder, that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily worldwide over the Internet and radio. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. You've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.